grew up a Yankee fan.
Pitch hit in the air to right. Cutting toward the line is Betts in the corner. I can't see where what happened. I honestly don't know.
That's interference. Got to be. The fan took the ball out of his hand. He's out.
See, if the ball goes in the corner, the stands that jut out take away our view.
Well, he's got the ball, and a fan took it right out of his glove. You can see it. He's got his glove in his hand. The fan in a Yankee uniform is prying the ball out of Mookie's glove. This guy should be kicked out of this game.
I couldn't agree more.
Oh, my goodness.
He's allowed a route, and that's all. I couldn't agree more.
He physically opened up Mookie's glove as he was trying to get the glove back. You don't want to lose your glove. And he took the ball out of his glove.
John Sterling and Susan Waldman from last night's World Series game. The Yankees win. They trail 3-1 in the series.
Good thing Mookie Betts had to hold on to the glove, because that fan might have just took off with it.
Yeah. There's a Sports Illustrated writer I follow and like, Yankee fan. He refers to John and Susan as Ma and Pa Pinstripe, which is pretty funny.
That's good.
And said like they were incredulous at this call. The guy, there's a catch over by the sideline. Betts makes the catch, and this guy opens up the glove, wrenches it open, and pulls the ball out. And Betts, you know, Betts in the NFL, that wouldn't be a catch. I don't think he completed the act of making the catch.
In football, they might not have called it.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Just a foul ball. Where's Gene Steratore for a ruling? Gene, what did you see here? Did Mookie Betts have control of this ball? Anyway.
I can't believe you think this guy got a lifetime ban.
Lifetime ban?
There's no way.
Lifetime ban, Yankee Stadium.
No way he's banned for life from Yankee Stadium. I don't think. His buddy was ejected too, by the way. His buddy was grabbing, if you watch it, his buddy's grabbing Betts' other wrist. Like, Betts is trying to reach up with his right hand to get his left hand back, and his buddy's grabbing Betts' right hand. Yeah, maybe they both should get lifetime ban. I don't think they're going to.
Lifetime ban. You're the kind of person that can sit in the front row.
Uh-huh.
You can afford that ticket, which is probably, what, $3,000? And you're going to physically reach and grab a player? Lifetime ban.
Mm-hmm.
Should it not be a lifetime ban?
No, it should be. I just don't believe that the Yankees would do it. Someone up there loved it.
How many people have received lifetime bans from sporting events?
It's probably happened more than you think. I always wonder how well you enforce that, though.
Right, you could make it so if anybody sees you at a game, you go to, you know.
But if there's 70,000 people, like, how do you? It's tough. I feel like it would be tough.
Facial technology and
yeah, blah, blah, blah. It would be easier now.
It's the best I've got for you. 803-0550 and 1-888-552-550. Interesting responses to I didn't put it in a poll form. Maybe I should have put a poll on it. Do you think Bills fans care more about the MVP race than any other fan base?
Mm-hmm.
Yes or no?
I think it's probably yes. Who would even be second right now? Baltimore doesn't care about it because they already have two.
Right.
Kansas City does not care about it. I don't think. You mentioned like the Lions. I think the Lions, like, I don't know. Maybe that would be a good second choice. Do like the Eagles fans care about Jalen Hurts winning MVP or something? Like,
one response I got was, this is how it was in Philly with Embiid. They wanted him to win the MVP.
Yeah.
Wanted it to be validated that this is one of the best players, most important players in the sport. So someone wrote in that. There are a couple responses. And I find this interesting, too, about do you think Bills fans care more? This isn't a would you rather have it. This isn't an either or. It's just do you think Bills fans care more about the MVP race than other fan bases? And a lot of the answers are yes. And some of the answers are yes, and it's bizarre that we've all hitched our wagon to it so much. It is constant, the talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's often. It's because he doesn't have one. If he had one, it wouldn't be like this, right?
I don't know. Once he gets one, isn't this going to be about, well, he's got to he's got to match Lamar.
Is that what a Chiefs fan is doing right now with Mahomes and Brady?
Trying to track down Brady?
Is there a GOAT race? Is that all they care about right now? Is, hey, we got to get – Mahomes has got to be the GOAT. And how does he do that? Well, one, you're going to need the Super Bowls, yes, but pass him in MVPs. Get more MVPs than him. You're already almost there, right? Mahomes has two.
Yeah.
And Brady has three for his career. So maybe a Chief fan is second. Maybe they do care, even though Mahomes already has two because they're chasing 12. Mahomes is chasing Brady to be the best of all time. And maybe they do care about it that much.
So a couple responses.
What about a Niners fan for Brock Purdy?
I don't think so, right?
Isn't he another one of these? Everyone doesn't think he's any good.
That one's a real one. People say he's not that good. He was also Mr. Irrelevant, not drafted seventh.
Right, so wouldn't they be like, MVP will give him all the credit he finally deserves?
Yeah, you might have a little bit there.
Yeah.
Drew writes in, I think it's more about perceived disrespect. We get upset about power rankings, game picks, anything else where we can feel undervalued. We know Josh and what he stands on. We love him, and like a group of offensive linemen, we are always out to protect and defend him.
Right.
Mark writes in, yes, and it's horrible.
Okay. Uh-huh. That's it? Just that it's horrible?
Yes, and it's horrible. Aaron, no doubt, it's also very aggravating when we watch a player get the award who clearly didn't deserve it. Kevin writes in.
When's the last time that happened?
That a player got it and didn't deserve it?
A player clearly didn't deserve it. Like, even you could have voted for somebody else last year, but like Lamar Jackson didn't deserve it at all. Mahomes 2 years ago. I will say this. I don't know when the last example of that is. If Mahomes won it this year, throwing more interceptions than touchdowns, and their offense looking like this, then I might get there. If he won it this year with those types of numbers. But like the last time, I'm looking at the list. When Mahomes won it, he threw 50 touchdowns. When Rodgers won it over Allen.
48 touchdowns?
He had 48 touchdowns and like five picks. Like, Adrian Peterson was a running back, but he ran for 2,000 yards off a torn ACL. Like, I don't want to say he didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
I don't know what you would point at. It's like the last time, like, oh yeah, that dude, what a joke that dude won MVP.
Yeah, I didn't have a problem with Lamar winning it last year. I had a big problem with him being treated as if the fact that he wasn't unanimous was some sort of affront to the process.
Right, that was ridiculous.
Like, you could have a case. You'll make the case you thought it was Lamar over Josh. I'll listen to it. I can't listen to the idea that every person alive should have that take or they're wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Which is
your bias, basically.
Right, which is ultimately what happened. One guy voted against Lamar and didn't even really vote against him, just voted for somebody else, and that was, well, this is terrible. It's kind of like the Josh overrated conversation that's happened. 11 NFL players said they thought he was overrated. 11 NFL players. That's it. 11.
Mm-hmm.
And those players might think he's the second best quarterback or the fourth best quarterback in football. I feel like that whole thing got spun up and, you know, we all jumped on that. Everybody went nuts for that. Follow up, by the way, as we get a call in here on the MVP. The Yankees fans have been told they're allowed back in their seats tonight.
I knew it. I knew it. Of course they are. They didn't leave that. Maybe they did leave the stadium last night. They didn't even lifetime ban. They didn't even get a 24-hour ban.
No, they're just allowed back
in
for Game 5.
They're
going to
be back in that stadium within 24 hours.
Absolute joke organization.
Wow, I'm not surprised, but that is amazing. They're back for Game 5.
They're back for Game 5.
Are they going to be sitting in the same seats?
I would assume.
Wow. How many camera pans to those two fans?
The game is about them tonight.
The game is about them, yes.
Oh, there's a ball down the right sideline, down the first base line. Let's see if our guys are...
What's his name? Capo Bianco?
Yeah.
You know, watch out for Capo Bianco on the right field wall.
Yeah, playing the first baseline. He said, quote, I know when I'm in the wrong, and as soon as I did it, I was like, boys, I'm out of here. I patrol that wall, and they know that. Is this guy trying to say he's normally the justice on that wall to prevent fans from doing what he did?
That's his wall. That's his wall in his mind. That's my wall. You don't come to my wall and make catches.
Brian in Southwest Florida. Hey, Brian, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. Great show. I'm a transient Buffalonian. I live down here in Cape Coral, Fort Myers. So it's a great question, Jeremy, but what I think you got to ask yourself is who are you really asking that question to? So it depends on who answers. If I answer, I'm 48 years old. I've experienced when I was my kid's age all four Super Bowl losses, so I know the heartache. You ask a kid like my 18-year-old son who's sitting next to me while I'm driving to school this morning, he's a diehard Bills fan. He's born in Buffalo, lives down here now with me, but he doesn't know the pain of the Super Bowl loss. So he'll take the Super Bowl. I already asked him. He'll take the Super Bowl. I'll take with you the MVP because I don't want to have to defend a fifth Super Bowl loss down here. I live out of market, so defending a fifth Super Bowl loss is it's crazy. It would be nuts. So I'm with you.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like I'm thinking about talking to Howard here on the Mets, how the further they went, he was good. He was fine. He was at peace. And maybe if you go to a World Series with it where it's Mets-Yankees, all of a sudden you're more afraid of it than you are excited about it. And if the Bills go to the Super Bowl, like I don't – the generation of fans like you, Brian, where – I mean, I didn't live in Buffalo and I didn't root for the Bills when they were in their four Super Bowls. I apologize. I rooted against them a couple times. But by the fourth one, I'm like Rocky IV. By the fourth one, I was on the Bills. Mm-hmm. I wanted them to win that one. I can remember as a kid switching sides. I mean, like, let's mm-hmm. go Bills. So I don't have the – my heart was ripped out of my chest that a lot of – the few people that are my age
right.
that watch the Bills have. So if they made it, I wouldn't be thinking about me. I wouldn't be thinking about, I don't know if I'll be able to take it if they lose a fifth.
Yeah, it wouldn't. I'm not alive for the first four Super Bowls. So like, I just don't even, it doesn't even register for me at
right.
all.
I wouldn't be at bothered all. By the Bills stands for Boy, I Love Losing Super Bowls joke that everybody heard, made for 30 years. Like,
yeah.
It would be the first one where I was invested where they lost. And I do understand how that would scare people off. Like, I mean, how many people say it all the time? Where you're a Yankee fan. I'd rather they lost to Cleveland than go to the World Series and get swept. I saw that comment from, I mean, Evan, who produces here at WGR, he said it yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
He's a Yankee fan. I'd rather they lost to Cleveland than get swept.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to go as far as you go, and then, you know, you end up getting hit by the pain. Like, I wish I didn't feel this.
Yeah. I just want to feel what the week is like leading up to it, or the 2 weeks leading up to it. That's why I would 100 times out of 100 vote for the Super Bowl loss. In a vacuum, like, the MVP is cool, but give me 2 weeks of build-up to the Super Bowl. Like, sure, we'll see how the game goes, but yeah, it never would ever come to my mind about the fifth Super Bowl loss. I know it would be five Super Bowl losses. Is that would be the record, by the way? Minnesota doesn't have a five. They have four also, maybe. Like, I guess you could care about that, but
the Patriots have the most.
Super Bowl losses?
Yeah, five.
That's funny.
Broncos, too. They both have five.
Yeah. I just wouldn't worry about it at all. I'm worried that people are going to make fun of the 90s again. Basically, is what that is.
There's part of that.
It's an ability to bring back up the old wounds, is what it is. So I guess I do understand it, but just anyone of my age, I don't think is going to be thinking about it.
803-0550 if you want to join us in 1-888-550-2550. It's Bills and Dolphins this week. Looking ahead to Bills Colts, Anthony Richardson to the bench for Joe Flacco.
Yes. Don't you think it is 100%? It definitely has to do with what happened on Sunday.
Taking himself out for a very long third and whatever?
Yeah. I don't know. Strange coincidence. And
it really might be a strange coincidence, because if you've been watching them play, Flacco gives them a better chance to win games.
He does.
And they're going on the road to Minnesota this week.
Yeah. But what's your goal this year? What are you trying to do? You're trying to squeak in the playoffs with
you're
Joe
trying
Flacco?
You're trying to win games, man. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to win games. You're Shane Steichen in your second year as a head coach, and you're trying to win games. And you could say, my number one thing I got to do is find out if my quarterback is good enough. But if you are also, like, how's that working for the Giants right now? Continued dedication to finding out if Daniel Jones
is
good enough.
They're into year six.
That's right.
Of that.
That's right.
The Colts haven't made it through half a season with Richardson as their quarterback.
I don't think. Well,
this
see.
Is half what EJ Manuel got
for Richardson, because he got
right.
hurt. And he got hurt. In
how
year
many games
one.
Has he played? Seven games.
The fact he's been hurt as often as he is a mark against him.
That's right.
Availability matters.
Maybe this is the same thing too. I think he's getting benched because the locker room, like, thinks he's a joke right now. That
yeah.
Steichen feels like he has to go to Flacco because his players are going to think it's a clown show if they keep this guy in. He did what? He pulled himself. I'm going to battle every play here, and my quarterback can't stay on the field.
Most those guys are not going to battle every play.
I know, but
plenty
like,
of guys do come out,
but you
a player
just,
two.
It's different. You don't see quarterbacks ever do that because they're tired. It just doesn't. It doesn't happen. So I wonder if it has to do with the locker room and the players, and how Steichen feels like he's got to manage that situation. And I guess that's kind of the same point, right? Like, if the players don't believe, like, your goal here is to win, and your goal is just, oh, it's going to play this guy until, you know, the wheels fall off. They also, by the way, have the longest streak in NFL history of beginning a season without... Every single game has been 1 to 6 points, decided by 1 to 6 points.
Right. And so if they have Flacco in every game, they might have another win.
Right. And that might be why they're doing it, is their players might be thinking that way. Hey, we've got a guy here that gives us a chance to win. What are we doing here?
Well,
let's try to win.
That's about the play on the field and not one play on the field. I don't think it comes down to the incident where he tapped out for one play, which he did, because at the risk of kind of demeaning the whole conversation, I don't think NFL locker rooms are run like First Take. Chase Daniels saying, like, oh, there's a mutiny. Like, maybe not. Maybe not. If there is, it's because he can't find receivers.
Here's the quote from Stephen Holder, from a Colts source. Stephen Holder covers the Colts for The Athletic. The Colts, quote, want Richardson to take a step back, take a break from the pressure of the job, and try to grow during this time.
Right.
That, to me, sounds like they don't think he's an adult.
I mean, that sounds like he can't complete passes. Brian. So they'll play Brian Flores this week, who... Stephen Ruiz had a fun conversation, had a fun point about franchise quarterbacks and is your guy good or is your guy not good?
Mm-hmm.
Stephen Ruiz of The Ringer, he said, I think I might apply my is your quarterback good based on how much respect Brian Flores gives him. Flores, you know, blitzes the hell out of quarterbacks. The Vikings have a very good defense this year. They attack everybody. So Minnesota hosts Indy. Now they're going to get Flacco instead of Anthony Richardson.
Yep.
My view of this is I have Colts fantasy football players. I feel like I can play now because Joe Flacco completes passes, whereas Richardson is very unreliable. Here's Brian Flores on the whole thing. He was asked about Richardson coming off the field on that play.
I know there's been a lot of talk about the play where he came out, but did you watch the play? You know, I mean, that throws a 300-pounder off him. He runs around. I thought it was an incredible play. I mean, our guy got tired watching him. I think he's, you know, a very, very talented young player. He's a dangerous player. I mean, on any snap, he can break a couple tackles and go the distance. He's fast. He's got a huge arm.
So he kind of defends him a little bit.
A little bit.
He throws off a 300-pound player. Can I not?
What was the next play, by the way? It was a handoff?
It was a handoff.
Wouldn't he have known that? Wouldn't the coach have told him that?
Right. Normally, what would have happened on that play is they would have just called a handoff. He wouldn't have come out. He just handed the ball to somebody else. Instead,
right,
Joe Flacco came in and handed the ball off. So ultimately, nothing really changed other than the quarterback that handed the ball off on the third down and forever.
Which is why, like, Steichen probably in that moment would have been, hey, dude, like, I'm calling a run play here. We're giving up on the set of downs. Just stay in the game. Don't make this a thing.
But why is it actually a thing?
It's a thing because you never see it.
You're saying what you want him to do is to have a performative handoff to prove that he doesn't... Listen, if you hand the ball off here, you won't lose the locker room? I feel like on that play, the thing that will lose the locker room if you're Anthony Richardson is everybody in film study that week, like, hey, Josh Downs is open and Michael Pittman's right here if you wanted him. You could have taken the shot to Alec Pierce, but instead you ran around for 10 seconds and threw off a lineman and got tackled for no gain.
Yeah.
That loses the locker room more than Flacco handed the ball off on third down.
He also, like, the completion percentage thing is a joke, but if you look at his yards per attempt, he's a higher yards per attempt than Matthew Stafford, Tua, Geno Smith, Kyler Murray, Dak Prescott this year. He has almost the same yards per attempt as Stroud, Mahomes, Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow. Like,
but he has it in an unsustainable way.
Maybe. He's getting big plays every week.
You can't throw 3 82-yard plays and expect that you're going to win a game with efficiency.
He completed 9 passes for 212 yards, and they lost to the Texans by 3 last week.
One of those was a 69-yard touchdown to Josh Downs. You have to extend drives. You have to keep your offense on the field. You have to play in structure to some degree.
It would be interesting if we were in Indy and evaluating this quarterback because, yes, he cannot sustain drives, but we've talked about here how much more likely you are to get a scoring play on a drive if you get explosive plays, and this dude is averaging almost 20 yards of completion sometimes. That's what he averaged last week. He leads the league 16 yards per completion on the season. Like, some of these games, last week, he completes 9 passes, 212 yards, averages 24 yards of completion.
What would you think of an offense that was built out of all completions to Gabe Davis? Because that's what that is,
mm-hmm.
right? You think that offense would be good?
I would want more from it, but
it's not
there
good.
Are worse things. They scored 27 points and lost to the Texans by 2.
They scored 27 points in part because one of them was a scoop and score.
And, of course, he gives you rushing stuff that Joe Flacco's not going to
give
you.
That he does, too. 803-0550. Gina in Delaware, quickly before the break. Hey, Gina.
Oh, wait. Woo! Hold on. Thank you. Woo! Hi, guys. Sorry. Thank you. I apologize. I was in another room. Yes, I was calling in because I was weighing in, and I always call myself the Fossil fan. So shout out to that dude in Florida. I got 10 years on him. My parents are right around where he lives in Fort Myers. My point being is, being a Fossil fan, I hear 10 more years than all you youngins of you went 4 times and never won. And defending that for 10 more years puts a lot of gray on your head, okay? So before you would have even answered that question, it's not about me. It's about Josh Allen. I'm going to tell you something, and I know y'all would believe me because you know my passion for the Bills. By the way, shout out to Diggs. He doesn't listen, I'm sure. But, man, do I feel for that bro. He loves playing football, guys. He's so passionate. I'd take him back on our team in a heartbeat and let him blend in with all the new friends that we've acquired since he's been gone. But getting back to what I was saying is – my passion for Josh Allen. This morning at 2 a.m., now I'm not much of a social media fan. That's why I get on the phone and call you guys. This is my social media. So thank you for allowing me this opportunity to speak and show my passion to everybody. But this morning I was watching these reels of Mr. Brightside and that one reel when the fans were singing it. You know, if you don't have a heart, you need to watch those videos because you would cry when you see Josh Allen and those bright eyes and the passion he has for Buffalo, for the fans, for the game, for the human being. That DeMar Hamlin video, never saw it. Like the tribute to him makes you want to cry. Bills fans are so passionate, and they're selfless, and they're unselfish. So, of course, it's Josh Allen every day, all day. Give it to him so because we then will feel through him victory. Thank you so much. Go, Bills. God bless the Bills and God bless Buffalo. Let's go.
Thanks, Gina. Gina in Delaware. Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast joining us on the other side. We'll get his thoughts on the Keon Coleman maybe breakout a little bit game. They did very well in Seattle and next Miami, Indy, and on. So we'll get Joe Marino's thoughts on the state of the Bills right now and the matchup with Miami for a second time. Jeremy and Joe, you can give us a call, 803-0550, as Gina just did, and chime in on the Josh Allen MVP conversation. Do you think Bills fans care more about it than any other fan base? Asking that question this morning on WGR.
It'll be good to have him on back. He's been out for 4 weeks and never sure what that brings, right, in terms of staying refined, staying polished. But I'm sure he's been chomping at the bit to get back, and it'll be nice to have him back. And so, you know, again, it's never about one person, right? Especially when you play up front, it's about the sum of the parts, and it's about four guys rushing as one, and that'll be important for us as we move forward as a defense overall.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott, Von Miller set to return to the lineup. Bills and Dolphins, Sunday, 1 o'clock. Temperatures in the 50s, overcast. Jeremy and Joe with you on a Wednesday as we turn the page to the next week. The Bills, of course, 6-2. And the Ravens traded for Deontay Johnson. Steph Diggs' season is over with a torn ACL. Those are some of your NFL headlines. Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast, joins us on the Western Hotline to preview the Miami game, the rematch, and to also wrap up what happened against Seattle. Joe, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jeremy.
So, Joe, what was your favorite part about the Seattle game? Which was it? There's the dumb luck, which the Bills had a little bit of that. Seattle had a very, very bad day. But, you know, the Bills made some of their luck and ultimately looked like a dominant team. I mean, Bills fans, I think, came away really happy start to finish.
Yeah, it's tough to narrow it down to one thing because I think there's a lot. But I think the thing that really stands out to me that I'm most excited about is the chemistry that we're seeing develop between Josh Allen and Keon Coleman. Following up his first 100-yard game of the season, the first 100-yard game for any Bills receiver this season with 5 catches for 70 yards and a touchdown against Seattle. And it's how that production came together. Of course, the touchdown on the 3rd and goal from the 4, a fade route over a good corner in Tariq Woolen, who's like 6'4 with 34-inch arms. I mean, honestly, if you could pick any corner in the league to defend Coleman on a fade route, you'd probably pick Tariq Woolen. You certainly have a heck of a case to be the option. And Keon just wins the ball. And Tariq Woolen's hand was right through it. And he just, out-muscled him for it and got a touchdown. And then you're seeing him work from the slot in a no-hitch seam shot where Josh just lays it out there and trusts that Keon's going to get to that spot and go get the football. You saw on the PI that he forced later in the game against Rick Wolin where he was able to beat press coverage with a hard inside step, arm over to get free. He got on top of that corner quick, and Rick Wolin had no choice but to pull him back and interfere to prevent a touchdown. That, and you saw a second window throw on a play action pass that was called back due to penalty. But the point being is the chemistry that is blossoming is obvious between Josh and Keon, and there's a lot of trust that Josh is developing very quickly here. And the plays are really spectacular. He's getting yards after the catch. He's winning in those contested situations. In a lot of ways, he's very quickly become the player Brandon Bean told us he would be for this team. And so it's off to a great start, but it really feels like the last 2 weeks, and especially against Seattle, that piece is what's really, really getting me excited.
Yeah, the Coleman piece, you know, Joe, one of the things we wondered about when the Bills took him, it was a receiver draft, and I think a lot of the receivers are living up to the hype right now, pretty much throughout the first round and in the second round, and Coleman's one of those guys. To me, he's another that represents how there are a lot of different kinds of receivers, and maybe more importantly, there are a lot of different ways to win. He might not be a separator, but he's winning in ways that he can win.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I think probably maybe the most impressive thing I can say about Keon Coleman is that so far he has 396 receiving yards. 94% of his passing snaps have come on the outside. Among the 53 receivers in the NFL with at least 300 receiving yards, nobody has played a higher percentage of their snaps on the outside than Coleman. Meanwhile, he's number two in the NFL in yards after catch per reception. That's a really unique blend of things. That's not common, right? You typically, if you're playing all your snaps on the outside, those are not favorable plays to get yards after catch. And it's difficult, right? That was one of the things we talked about with Stephon Diggs is a big portion of his snaps all come as an outside receiver, never in the slot. And those are heavyweight battles up on the line of scrimmage where you don't have that two-way go and you're pinned up against the sideline. And so I think through all of it, and you mentioned he's a unique player, I think that blend of production from wide alignments with yards after catch is really, really unique.
Lastly on him, blocking-wise, how well is that going? Because there were two plays I think we all saw on Sunday, one into the bench, and there was another one where he pointed at, I think, Wolin and then pancaked him. So there was those two plays. Is that going well in general, though, for him, like the rest of the stuff?
Yeah. It's definitely something that he's performing well with is those stock blocks on the perimeter, which is obviously a big ask of the Bills receivers in this offense. They got a block, and you know, Keon's played the most snaps of any receiver on the team, and that's because of his ability to function as a blocker. And so I think that's been an area of his game that I didn't know how he'd perform. And I think it's going quite well. And you know, you don't drive dudes into the bench and put them on their back and have some attitude towards it if it's not important to you. And I think that's been really encouraging. And I think really ever since that game was at Jacksonville, he was suspended for the first quarter. You know, that was kind of an interesting moment, but maybe it was a real turning point because, man, things have really, really skyrocketed from there.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. All right, Joe, defensively, it looks like, you know, I was listening a bunch of different breakdowns of what happened, and all that Seattle really had in this game was a bit of the checkdown game. I think they missed DK Metcalf a lot, so that's got to be put out there. But otherwise, I mean, Geno Smith, I read a quote from him going into the game, how he wants to be blitzed. He welcomes the blitz. And yet, whenever the Bills got pressure, whether it was a blitz or not, like he dropped back and he did not have answers down the field. There were a lot of dump-offs and a lot of underneath throws because there was nothing available anywhere else.
Yeah, I don't think he attempted a pass that was targeted 20 yards or more down the field. So I think a lot of that was the pressure looks that the Bills were dialing up. They were pretty effective. I know they didn't get a bunch of sacks, maybe just one sack in the game, but pressure was very, very consistent. And, yeah, I think the absence of DK Metcalf absolutely helped the Bills because it took away their best vertical receiver in their field stretcher, which changes all of the spacing. But I think Ryan Grubb, their offensive coordinator, did come in with a plan that was designed to – kind of take advantage of where the Bills have been vulnerable on defense, which is the quick passing game, which is the screens. And so I think credit to the Bills for being a lot more ready for those types of plays. A lot of good, just stay leveraged, drive downhill, make tackles, where in the past, I think that they were falling a lot more victim to play fakes and getting out of their responsibilities. And then you're getting gashed on quick dump offs. And so I thought the Bills were more ready. Their screen recognition was a lot better. But, yeah, I think the layer of not having DK Metcalf certainly played a big part in how the Bills could probably be a little bit more aggressive in that and playing defense that way.
Are you seeing something like when they're in goal-to-go situations that's allowed them to be so strong, especially in the past couple weeks? I know for the season they're ranking pretty good on that front, but the Jet game and then this past week, like before Geno falls, I mean, that's a fourth down, right? Like they've looked pretty strong when they're getting in tight there in the red zone.
Yeah, I mean, it's just coming down to execution. There's only so many different play calls you can call in a short yardage down there. And I think the Bills, their defensive line, if I've noticed anything, they play with great leverage in those situations. And that frees up their second level to run and fill. And it's worked together well. And, yeah, I mean, it's been an impressive situation. And that's like, you know, you can catch yourself watching games and saying, just let them score. Well, no, not at all. I think the Bills have had some very good moments of, you know, Josh Allen makes that tackle. They go first to go from the 7, no points. Thinking back to, was it the Jets game? Taylor Rapp with a big tackle that forced them in a goal-to-go situation. The Bills got out of that as well. So it's a matter of kind of the identity of the defense, which is make them continue to execute, and eventually they're going to make a mistake. And I think that shows up even when you're pinned up against your own goal line.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. Joe, if there's another trade to be made, and we saw Baltimore make another trade for a receiver yesterday, the Chiefs made a trade for Josh Uche along with DeAndre Hopkins. If there's another trade to be made on this roster, where is it?
I think your most logical spots are defensive tackle, defensive end, and safety. I feel like that's where you can really get upgrades and get reasonable answers that can step in and help you. I think Von Miller's return is going to matter a lot. But you know, you're still seeing a decent amount of Casey Tuhill on the field. Epinesa is pushing 60, 70% of snaps. I think there's room for another player on the edge to come in and add to that mix. And then if you do that, I think it does free up more opportunities for DeJuan Smoot, even Epinesa, maybe even Rousseau, to rush from interior gaps, right? And so I think you have some space there. And then on the contrary, you could just improve your interior defensive line with kind of strengthening that rotation. And I certainly think there's room for Jones and Oliver to be more impactful this year, but I think the depth can be upgraded. And then will the Bills pursue a safety? And if they did, would they be able to come in and earn the trust and be able to kind of stiff arm Damar Hamlin from being the starter, who I think Damar's a fine depth player. I don't think he's a preferred starter. I don't know that he's the worst player in the world, like I think a lot of the conversation kind of paints him to be, but he certainly feels upgradable if the Bills can find an answer there. You know, I think there's a lot of candidates. Ty Matthew from the Saints really pops for me as an option there. So those would be the three most logical positions to me, and I guess we're less than a week away from finding out if that's going to happen.
The Bills often dominate the Dolphins almost actually every time they play them. Is there any reason for you to think that this Sunday could be different?
Well, you know, you'd like to think that the Bills will handle their business for sure. The Dolphins are obviously not having a good season, tons of injuries on their defense, and you know, but they still have that explosive dynamic with their offense. They're running the ball pretty well. They've had over 150 rushing yards in each of the last three games. And so, yeah, I mean, you got to play the game. It certainly feels like the Bills should handle their business, but it feels like if there ever was a chance, right, that they can come steal one in Orchard Park, something that they haven't been able to do in a long time, you know, you got to make sure you take care of your business here because, you know, this AFC is really goofy, right? I think you have only eight teams that are within a game of 500, which is crazy. Like, that's it. You have the 4-4 Colts, and then it's 3-5 or worse, 9-16 seeds. So this race for 6-7 in the AFC is, these teams, they're 2-6, probably don't think they're out of it. So, and the Dolphins are 2-5. They're one back of like the Colts and two back of the Chargers. So I don't know. I think it's pretty wide open. I'm not sure they're ready to punt on the season. So part of, if they're going to do it, though, they got to go win in Buffalo this week. So, yeah, you got to play the games, but I do expect the Bills to handle the business.
Last thing, Joe, like looking at the AFC, you know, the Chiefs are the Chiefs. We know the Chiefs. The Ravens, felt like for a while there you had a lot of Bills fans that were talking about the Ravens like they were some unstoppable force. Then they go and they lose on the road to Jameis Winston. So was there anything in that game you saw or anything you see from the Ravens where, sure, a positive game script, which of course what they got against the Bills, like they're not a perfect team. They're not some team that can't be handled. And would, I don't know about picking them to lose to the Bills in a matchup, but you'd probably pick a much different game.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, I think it's fair. Divisional games are always a little different, right? So that's the Browns. This is a Ravens team that also lost to the Raiders earlier in the year. So they're not bulletproof. They had this moment last year, if you recall. Like, they went and they beat the Lions, like, 38-6.
And they dominated the Niners, too, along the way.
Exactly, right? And it was very much like, oh, boy, this is an unstoppable team. And then, you know, there's obviously the point of they have a lot to prove in the playoffs, right? I mean, I know that they got to the AFC Championship game last year, but, I mean, they got a gift in the Texans after they had their first-round bye to get to Kansas City, and they lost that game. So I think they're a good football team. I'm not taking anything away. I don't think anyone's excited to play the Ravens, but I think the fact of painting them as a wagon that is impossible for any team to beat, I mean, obviously that's just not true.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast and Locked On NFL Scouting podcast. Joe, thanks, and enjoy the game Sunday. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Thank you.
You can find the Locked On Bills podcast where you get your podcasts. Would highly recommend subscribing, making it a part of your day. Locked On Bills and Locked On NFL Scouting. Jeremy and Joe with you. I have a stat of the day. I can get you when we get back. It's on a crazy, crazy good offense in the league, which is doing something that's never been done since the merger. And then they did it again. That's how good things are going in Detroit. Get you the stat of the day next. All right, so stat of the day. The Lions are a good offensive team. You might have learned that.
Yeah.
They have a bunch of very good players. They have more touchdowns than incompletions in the last five games.
That's amazing.
They were the first team to do that in a four-game stretch since the merger.
And they've done it in five?
Now it's a five-game stretch. 24 touchdowns to 19 incomplete passes.
Wow.
They play the Packers this week.
Wow.
Yeah. So, they're good.
They're incredible. That's a great game this week. I hope Love's going to play, probably, right?
I saw the guys at Part of My Take suggesting Lions-Bills Super Bowl. America needs it. You know the Super Bowl where it is this year?
It's New Orleans.
It is New Orleans.
New Orleans. Why, you think it's a good Super Bowl destination city to
it's pretty good.
To go to?
It's pretty good. You know? Anyway,
was one of the 90s Super Bowls in New Orleans?
The 90s Super Bowls were in Tampa, Minnesota,
Pasadena,
the Rose Bowl, and Atlanta.
Okay, so no.
Was it the Rose Bowl? I think it was the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
So, New Orleans. You know what else happened in New Orleans in the Superdome?
Syracuse.
Yeah.
Syracuse. I know. I hear about it once every other month.
The national championship.
In New Orleans.
Yep. A cool 21 years ago. It's not pathetic to still be living on that. That's not pathetic at all. You know, you think, oh, I just want one before I die. Then you have one. Then 21 years pass, and you're like, maybe one of my teams could win again sometime. All right.
Arsenal's pretty good.
When's the last time they won anything? 20 years? I mean, FA Cups don't count. I'm going to go.
Caribou Cups?
I'm going to go for the Champions League this year. The actual league's already toast. It's over.
Just for you.
Cursed season.
I still got a shot.
No, you don't. Your team stinks.
That by one point.
Your team stinks.
That by one point. They're fine.
Please, you can't hold up. All right. Sal, coming up top of the hour. We'll get the, check in with Sal. He was off yesterday, on today for Media Day down at One Bills Drive. Josh Allen was at the game,
at the Yankee game. Yep. Wearing a Yankee ball cap.
Did the guy that pulled the ball out of Mookie Betts' glove get to meet Josh Allen yesterday? That's what I got to know. I got to find out.
They sent him up to Allen's suite?
Yeah, right. Like, oh, why don't you go meet Josh Allen? So maybe Josh is going to be asked about that. He was at the Yankee game last night. Jeremy and Joe, you can give us a call, 803-0550. We've got Sal coming up. We've got Worst Call Wednesday, and plenty more to get to here on WGR.